Welcome to The Ether. Today is Monday, April 11th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by LuArt. LuArt is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. LuArt provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Intern Capital. Everyone knows interns make the world go round, so when it comes to picking out your interns, make sure you choose the best. The best, you say? That's right, the best. And everyone knows all the best interns come from Intern Capital. Be sure to follow Intern Capital on Twitter and keep an eye out April 14th for the Intern FT Mint launching on One Planet. Links are in the show notes. And for more information, check out intern.capital. Be sure to follow Intern Capital on Twitter for daily ship posts and stock tips. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, a Super TerraSpace. Tokenomics, staking, liquidity, and value capture for NFTs and protocols. Let's take a listen.
Hello. Hello.
Hey.
Good to have you here.
We had a group a second ago, and the whole group got rugged as far as like the host got wrecked. So I noticed your room is actually running. I just sort of moved us here instead of making a new one.
Yeah, that's great.
Cool.
I mean, we've got a key subject to discuss, but
yeah, we can stick to topic. Obviously, I just noticed that your room's time was now, so I figured let's just jump on and listen to your topic while we're here.
Excellent. Okay. Excellent. That's great. You're always welcome. And I know we've had a few discussions, and I always tag you. So great to have you here. Well, Simon's just joined, so I think we're just going to get him teed up. I can see he's here, and we have a cast of many, Simon, for our regular spaces. So great start.
I freaked out. I thought the time zone changed again. Okay, 45 people. I'm like, wait, did I come in an hour late?
Yeah, we had a host that, like, I guess dropped, maybe fell asleep or something. the whole group got dumped. So we were actually having a chat about something, and then I noticed you had yours on, so I was like, wait, let's go ahead and jump on yours. Okay, so
fantastic. Well, most welcome indeed, everyone. So, I mean, this is the latest in our regular series of weekly spaces where we delve into a topic in detail. The format, as always, is open floor, open discussion. And obviously, we've already got two fantastic speakers lined up to join Simon and myself on the discussion. Anyone else who wants to join the debate, just simply press request and be delighted to get you to come forward. So yeah, quite an unorthodox start. Normally we're fairly quiet. We maybe have six or seven folks, then it builds up to 40, 50 and so on. So it's great. Instantly a crowd. So we're not disappointed by that whatsoever. So, I mean, the intention really is, as I say, we've been doing these spaces now for probably 4 or 5 months, and we tend to, we started with various different Terra topics at quite a high level, and now going to a little bit more depth. I think what provoked this week's topic really was there's a whole raft of different NFT projects. And obviously, it's not just limited to NFT, but the focus here is kind of to start with NFTs, starting to offer opportunities to stake. To stake your NFT, good example, WAGMI Monkeys and Kongs, where they're doing staking to effectively birth a baby baby monkeys, which is very nice. Galactic Punks have started their staking, you know, icing their various PFPs in return for rewards. There are the likes of Lunar Bulls, who are literally just kicking off their staking program. I can see Gilles has joined us up to speak as well, obviously part of Wagmi Monkeys. But obviously, just coming back to Lunar Bulls, they've just announced that there'll be some staking capabilities. What we really wanted to explore with the community is, how could this possibly work? Have we got examples from other chains that we've seen that have been very successful? And also allied to that, the second part of this is looking at, you know, the tokenomics of some of these projects. And do you always need a token? Why is it there? How does it maintain its value? There's often we see token launches, particularly in Terra, where there's an initial fanfare, an initial spike, and then there's kind of almost a death spiral for certain tokens, not all. So really, that was kind of the scene set that I wanted to put in, and wasn't expecting such a huge audience to start with, but this is most appreciated, and obviously looking forward to getting straight into a detailed debate. So I'll hand over to Simon for now, and then I think we can start working our way around the panel.
Sweet. Well, it's going to take me a little bit of time for my brain to catch up. It's 6 a.m. here, and it's 4 hours sleep, but basically, so, you know, you know, the idea of these spaces, obviously we love an open discussion. So, you know, we love to have different ideas and perspectives and thoughts and people come up. So it's really great that we've already got some kind of good speakers up. I think, you know, obviously the idea for these spaces was, you know, to talk about tokenomics, but we wanted to keep it on the theme of NFTs because we've been on an NFT whirl for the last couple of weeks, and we're connected with a lot of projects. But this also includes projects, if we get time, I think this also includes protocol. And so it's a discussion on, you know, not just the staking of NFTs and the value and those tokens, but also exploring the you know, value capture mechanisms of tokenomics of protocols. And I've been doing a lot of work on this over the last, you know, maybe a week or so, because I've been almost feel like writing a tokenomics thesis on redesigning a tokenomics system. And there's a lot of nuances to it, you know. The idea that tokenomics, there's almost this perfect equilibrium. This, you've got to find this perfect balance between emissions and value capture and the timing at which, you know, this happens. And I can speak on the protocol side. Your whole idea is using those tokenomics to bootstrap, you know, you're almost bootstrapping incentive in your protocol for a period of time until you can build up the revenue to the point to come in to build more value capture to, you know, obviously support those emissions and the tokens. So it's almost like you're having to delay. It's almost like you're having to lock up tokens for a period of time to kick the can down the road long enough to build up revenue to be able to support the token. So it's quite an interesting almost dance. And I think it's going to be the same with NFTs in a way. So I'm going to stop my rambling and pass it on to someone else who is willing to, you know, get into the, you know, kickstarting discussion. And we'll start with NFTs.
I think an obvious first speaker, if you're feeling comfortable, will be Gilles, because obviously you can talk to us around the actual practicalities and development that you're seeing with the Wagmi Monkeys. If that's okay for me to absolutely put you on the spot at the start. If not, anyone else feel free to chip in. It looks like Gilles is about to step to the floor, so the floor is yours, sir.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, about tokenomics and staking of NFTs. You saw with Wagmi, we're doing more art drops. So you stake the Kongs or monkeys. And after a period of time, you receive a baby, which is also valued at a certain amount of Luna. So you do get a value. We don't have a token yet. You do see this on other chains, like with Dire Robotics on Sol. They farm scraps, and for scraps they can get a Tayo baby. We did see it also with the Boryuko Dragons. They didn't have a token, as far as I know, but they also did the babies. So it offers a great entrance for people seeking to enter Wagmi or whatever community at a lower value, because of course the babies are not as expensive as the Kongs or even the Wagmi Monkeys. Also has something to do with the supply size, but yeah, all in all, it's a great entrance for people looking for the Alpha we offer and the product we want to give them, which is great art. Also, maybe looking into or probably looking into some more DeFi staking. That will be something for the babies, so they'll also have their own utility. It's not just for kongs and monkeys. So yeah, that are things that the WalkMe Monkeys is looking into. And I'm keen to see more about it. But as always, he keeps the progress close to his chest. So we only know if he really has it done and we can roll out. So yeah, there's definitely a teaser for more utility for the babies as well. Thanks.
Yeah, that's great, Gilles. I think as well, it's interesting that we've seen the floor for the babies really establish itself quite strongly in the early stages of that. And yeah, to your point, you've talked about additional utility for that new collection. So I think that's one of the challenges as well. Is are these just a if you like no value spin-off, but I think there's some genuine benefit there. Something else I wanted to explore, and we can probably get into this, is I think there's a trade-off, and Simon and I were talking about this on a sort of a general chat the other day, that obviously when we're encouraging staking in the context of NFT projects, the trade-off for the project itself is obviously one of the main ancillary income sources for the DAO post mint is the fees from the secondary markets. But if you have a significant proportion of your NFT series tied up in staking, by default, there's only going to be a smaller circulating supply that's then going to be there to generate that income on the secondary market. So just something else I wanted to throw out there. And again, if anyone's thought about that in the context of NFT projects. Clearly, we've got a host of great speakers up. So really, I mean, the approach for those of you who haven't been on our spaces before is, speak up and take the floor and give us your thoughts.
So what's the theory in the NFT community now as far as, is it a good idea to have some kind of treasury that then goes and accomplishes something with money that's generated? So for example, let's say you have royalties or something like that that are attached to buying and selling of an NFT. Could those royalties be then used to sort of maybe buy up the excess NFTs that are sitting around in the market, or maybe that could be used as a way to create some kind of a yield generation for NFTs so that you sort of like own part of the project in a sense, kind of like a dividend. What's the theory around this? Like, and maybe how does the, how do you see like people's behavior responding to those kinds of ideas or is that just too much? Like what are people expecting these days?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. If I can tag on to that, at WalkMe, we actually do have a wallet of Kongs. I think it's something of 60 plus Kongs in it. Those were left unclaimed after the holders mint. Holders could claim Kongs for one Luna. It was something WalkMe did for long-term holders. Normal price was 3 Luna, but not all the holders claimed them. So we actually had some left. Now we use them for promotion purposes, but we do use them sparingly. We are not just giving them away, as they're obviously worth something. So we have that. We also have, of course, the funds that come in out of royalties. Part of those funds are staked with Stater, as far as I know. We also use these funds for incentivization. We recently did a research with the DAO. People can do research on other successful projects in the space. and hand those in, and the best we will get an award for Honored USC. So that's also a thing we do. So we try to use it, use it well. But it's something we need to work on with me, I think, the Treasury, and get a clear, transparent view of all the funds we have and what we actually have in the war chest, because we also did buy other projects like Galactic Punks, Hellcats. We have a Hellcat, we have a Luna Bull, I think. We also have a Wack Wolf. So basically, most of the projects that have mended in the last 5 months or so, we do have one of those in the Treasury. So yeah, that's definitely a thing that's looked on positively. If you buy something of another project, it shows commitment to the space and what's around. So that's it's all all about sentiment in NFT, I think, and that's good sentiment.
I mean, I'll go from kind of a buyer of NFTs. So, Steffi, to your question, I think what I look for, because I like when I'm investing in something that one might have value. So if the value of what I'm buying, you know, its floor price will go up over time. But then two, knowing that behind the scenes they can generate some income. I mean, those are the things that I look for. And, you know, I think there's been some projects that we've interviewed in the past that are doing similar things, where they have a fund in their reserve, and that goal is to build that reserve and then pay that back out, almost like a you know, a mutual fund type of ordeal. That's something for me that I do appreciate, and I have seen that trend kind of pick up over time, I will say.
Yeah. I heard some people with some more, like, we don't need to get into this at all right now, but just, you know, there's all these like concerns that people have had about, some of the DAOs have had concerns about what kind of legal framework that they would want to have and what they want to say in public and not say in public when you're talking about anything yield generating. But so, you know, there are some concerns there. So in a fully decentralized system where these things sort of emerge spontaneously, it's less likely to get caught up in a problem, depending on what country you're living in. Not for the owner of the NFT, but for the founders.
Also, like, sorry, some of it's come to do with like taking an action. And that's, I think, why staking exists a lot. Because I think we investigated this when we were building the NFT, the Yield NFT marketplace, that for some reason, I didn't get into the weeds too much of it, but for some reason, like, part of the thing is that you weren't really allowed to give out passive income just the way it is, that users had to take an action to get it, like a reward. So I can't remember exactly the details of it. I'm not a lawyer, but it was something to do with like having to stake to collect their rewards rather than just giving out rewards normally. It was something along those lines.
Yeah, it's what I'm hearing is the owners need to vote on what to do with it, and then the owners need to click a button to claim, and then that kind of has some legal loopholes, is what I've gathered from the different conversations I've had.
Yeah, I've heard similar. Sorry, go on. God, I'll jump back in. Now, I was going to say, I've heard similar as well. It's all about passive versus active actions, and demonstration that there is some sort of intervention, and it's not just being given. But so I think it varies by jurisdiction. I always say this, you know, if you look at the kind of global framework, it's not really fully established remotely. And it'll be interesting to see how local legislation impacts how different projects behave and move forward. I think anyone's dealt with crypto taxation will know that it's an incredible minefield, and certainly certain markets are more friendly than others. I mean, what the other thing I was going to mention as well is there's an element of, I think, you know, going back to the kind of the first part of the conversation, the desire to have these kind of, you know, DAOs and so on. I think it's generated from, you have the initial mint of a project, some will mint and that will be it. But this is all about sustainability. And certainly having a DAO where you've got members of the people that purchase the NFTs, take a direct active stake, and then can effectively evolve the project. Obviously, you need to make sure there's certain guardrails in place. There have been some fairly high-profile examples of a single founder running off with the DAO funds. You know, make sure you got multi-sig wallets and all that sort of good protection in place. But I think ultimately, those funds should then be used to really further evolve, develop, effectively treat the project as a nascent business and see how you can take it further, and then effectively treat NFT holders almost as stakeholders in that business, give them an active voice, give them an opportunity. And I think those projects will be ultimately the long-term successful ones. And certainly if you look already in Terra, the projects that are kind of really kind of hitting the blue chip status are the ones that are evolving and continuing to develop a number of innovative ideas post-mint. And obviously a lot of that has to be backed by, you know, significant funds, and obviously the generation of those been taken from the DAO, using that as an investment treasury. It was interesting what Jules was saying on that subject for WAGMI, and how they're obviously developing that kind of base to build. I will give way to Karam. I think it is Karam.
Hello, guys. Just wanted to touch up on a few points there. Basically, I'm not an expert on it, but I've been investing in Terra NFTs for a while now. So the value capture occurs over a few different points. So one of them is scarcity. So how many of these NFTs you have around? The second one is obviously FOMO, just like Bored Ape Club. You know, we see a lot of celebrities and stuff having these NFTs. You want one of those as well. And so one of the main projects that I'm invested in is Hero NFT. What they did was how they kind of captured the scarcity is for two common NFTs, Hero NFTs, you get to burn it. And what you get is a villain NFT, which is really amazing, actually. So what that does is that it actually brings down the amount of NFTs you have in the market, as well as creating a new floor for a side project. Yeah,
it's a very similar concept to the UST Luna Burn Mint in a sense, right? Because
exactly.
You're creating a something of increasing value while simultaneously decreasing the number of existing, let's say, NFTs or tokens on the market, in a sense. It's a pretty cool mechanism. I like it.
Yep, definitely.
I just wanted to add real quick to CeFi's point before about it's a very, as I said, similar thing, right? It's a very interesting dance in terms of raising a treasury. And we've, myself and Superterra, have been looking into this a lot. It's quite interesting and it's difficult because, I mean, initial mint on a project in Terra, if you set up the mint and you've got maybe, you know, 3,000 pieces, the funds you get from it are quite low in general. Like, they may seem high to some people, but, you know, 400 to 600K doesn't really go that far when you're looking to build something innovative, right? And then you need the funds from secondary market. But if you're, you know, you maybe you haven't taken off as much, or you just sold out and you're not like a top blue chip project, the funds coming in from secondary market are probably likely not to be that high, especially if your royalties are low. Like if you're using, you know, a platform like Luart or something and you're getting, you know, 4 to 5% in royalties, it's really not that hard to fund the project. So it's kind of, I think this interesting jostle of where do you find the funds and the treasuries to, you know, build the project. To add all this value and then be able to give value back to the holders in the long term, which may not happen for a while because you may not even have the funds to run the project plus do that. So I think it is an interesting thing. Then some people come with tokens, right? But the token needs to have an actual use case and a value. I do believe tokens act as a really good way to distribute revenue, even within the team of the project, but also to outside stakeholders. But again, if it doesn't have value and it's launched, then, you know, it's not going to go anywhere and you're not going to get any noise from it. So it's some funny, interesting considerations. And I'd love to explore these because this is some of the core issues that we have is if you're going to build a DAO and a treasury, well, if there's no money, it's hard to do. So
one slightly different, interesting problem, and this comes back from, you know, more the video game industry. where, you know, you want new users to come to your NFT platform, and you don't want to have a situation where increasingly the only people that can participate in your platform are, you know, uber rich, right? Because you want the value of your thing to go up, but at the same time, it's like, okay, well then, doesn't that community just get smaller and smaller and smaller as time goes? Of course, that's what happens. This is what used to happen in mega guilds and video games, where, you know, back in the day, and what would happen is, you know, you would, the way they would continue to sort of have more people show up is either they cause inflationary pressure against the existing assets, meaning the existing swords and weapons and armor and crap that you have keeps going down in value relative to the new shit coming out, or B, you have a paper doll-like concept where maybe the NFT itself is not the main value proposition. So let's say, for example, let's take what Heroes did. So let's say Heroes has the ability to have an infinite number of brand new, fresh heroes, right? Like, so the base layer is ostensibly, like, maybe it's even free, you know, just to encourage participation. And then, you know, the next evolution is the part that might, you know, cost you some money, and that's where you see some changes start happening. And then the next evolution beyond that, maybe there's like the purchasing of rare items and cool stuff to make your thing look really cool, like, you know, backgrounds and whatever. I like the idea of these kind of like paper doll style NFTs, the same way video games like RPGs have done it for so long. And I don't know how feasible that is, you know, because the way I think NFTs on Terra work are, like, you either have your NFT or you have like a replacement for your NFT. You don't have an NFT with a bunch of little subcomponents and shit. I think there's a project on Cosmos that does that, but it's not particularly fully possible, I think, on the way our NFTs work so far. It just seems like an interesting, the paper doll idea seems like a really interesting piece of, like, of a puzzle to me. And the way I kind of think about it is, like, if you can have that, you know, your NFT, like your hero, for example, you could play in a game with it, you know, and you can fight for things, and maybe, like, you know, you have little swords and all the other shit, right? You have like your little weapons, and you can play like a game. And then by playing that game, maybe you can earn special components to NFTs. So some sort of interactivity, to me, as a someone that's played video games a long time, would be something like I'd love to see, but not just so, like, it, that has to be the creative piece of it and the engagement. So you bring new people and the existing people back over and over again to kind of be involved.
We should have a chat at some point, because me and Supertera have actually been working on something like this. We had a chat with, we had actual spaces with Strange Clan over in Cosmos, which is a really solid project, I believe, over in Cosmos. And we had this discussion around inflationary floors and customizable NFTs. So the whole idea was, like, how do you create a base level of NFTs that are plain, that can be customized, and you can actually earn your stripes, you know, like you can actually earn your way to upgrade your NFT or play a game or participate in farming or other protocols or whatever it is to earn items so that you can upgrade your NFT in both utility and in looks and customizability, and having this inflationary floor. But the question then is, how do you create an inflationary floor without affecting the OG series? So how do you create an inflationary floor but keep that balance in the OG NFTs? Because when you first, you know, provide all these OG original NFTs, you know, scarcity is part of that process. So if you offer inflationary supply and you give everyone the opportunity to earn their way to, you know, to value, then you may affect the OG NFT's value. So it's kind of this dance of, maybe you keep them separate and you keep the OG separate from the others. But yeah, we've actually, me and Supertera have talked about this quite a lot. We jump
on calls. Because what usually happens is, if new players come upon this ecosystem and they say to themselves, you know what, I'm going to go to a fresh new ecosystem where I can be an OG. This is the problem, like in gaming, and we saw this happen a lot. And the OGs want to be OGs. They want to feel like, okay, I'm special because I was quote unquote early. But the same people are the ones that are going to complain when no one else is playing the game anymore, right? So there has to be that, like, balance point where the new people, the fresh new people that start at the very beginning, feel like it's worthwhile having new people come and play, and somehow that increases the value of maybe some of the pieces of the stuff that they have somehow, right? Where they can maybe like trade for some of the components that they have related to their NFT, like a sword or something. You know, like game in game concept, like you have a marketplace for these things, and you know, maybe you want to be able to, you know, trade your thing for somebody else's thing. But you have to have a way to work yourself up to where the effort is high enough to where, like, if a new person spends a year on some game and the effort's high enough in time, right? Because time is the last piece of this equation. The effort's high enough, that person should be able to get to some sort of either OG or quasi OG status. Otherwise, the new guy just thinks, you know, well, screw it. I'm just going to go do something else. Like, this is always going to happen. So it's just like, how do you solve for that? And because what I've noticed is like these communities, like NFT communities, what has happened is a lot of the like elite NFTs you guys think about, like, I don't know, Ether Rocks or whatever, like these things have basically become the same community buying the same stuff from each other, which doesn't really elevate the brand. It just like, it just makes you go in a circle with smaller and smaller group of people that can afford it. And then eventually no one else wants to afford it and nobody else is actually engaged and no one wants to buy your shit either. Like, so you have this crazy high floor price, but they're all just like, you know, but they're at some point they're not going to go anywhere. Like, you know, except for a few like cultural phenomenon, like Ether Rocks or Cyberpunks, you know, the rest will have like a problem once you have excluded all the new people.
And as Simon said, it's really interesting. I'll give way to badges in a second. But for me, we've had this discussion because ultimately I think the ideal is you create a project where, yes, the OGs get a little bit of shine out of it, but actually you want to make it still accessible because otherwise you're having an ever-decreasing pool. And the elitism, I think, in some of those high-floor projects means that someone like myself and many others besides look at it and think, I'm never going to get involved in that project. It's completely unattainable. I'll go to this new one and build from there. Whereas I think getting that balance that I think is, as you rightly said, CeFi, if we can find a way as a community to create the sense that, yes, OGs, absolutely, that they get that initial glow and reward, but actually other people coming in late can aspire to kind of, you know, climb up. The ladder hasn't been pulled up, that there is a way to actually be there. How could anyone forever, for example, you know, buy in now, unless they're super rich, celebrity or something like that, into Bored Apes, for example? It's impossible because there is no route in. I know they're trying sort of things with secondary collections and so on.
Some people, it's not even about the money, right? Some people, it's absolutely about, it's about the win. Meaning,
it like, is, yeah.
If I go, like, for example, I sold really expensive video game characters long ago where, like, mm-hmm. I had, like, top-tier shit. But there's a big difference between the person that didn't earn them and simply paid cash for versus the person that actually earned them. I think you accidentally muted, but you see the difference? Like, earning them is a different process than just simply paying cash for them. And those two things, like the sense of achievement, the sense of winning, the sense of playing the game is part of it, I think.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Indeed. Sorry. Yes, I did press the wrong button. Apologies for that. Yeah. No. Absolutely. It's not. I mean, in fact, for many, and I think I include myself in this bucket, the material value side is a secondary, as opposed to the sense of community and ability to feel like you can be part of a project. And I guess that's the angle I'm coming at with something like Bored Apes. You see, it looks amazing, but it's unattainable because of the floor price. Conscious that Badgers has been patiently waiting, so I'll bring you to the floor to add your thoughts.
Hi, everyone. I just wanted to jump in quickly on what Seffi just said, and I don't think this is available on Terra for now, but there is a project called Altura that provides smart NFTs specifically for video games and applications. So I don't know if you guys checked that or know about this, but it's definitely worth checking out.
Spell that for me. What's the name?
Altura. So that's Altura.
Don't know if we'd lost some sound there. I was pausing. Are you done, Badgers? You were sort of middle of something there. Not to worry. Good old Twitter does occasionally rug people, so hopefully we'll get Badgers.
Anyway, I followed the project he just mentioned just to see what they're doing.
Cool.
Good info.
Excellent.
I'd love to just hear just stay quickly just on the same topic. We'll move on to Trev as well and back to Badgers. So the other side of the coin is talking about inflationary. This is kind of funny because it's a little bit like tokenomics, right? It's the same conceptual notion of supply demand. When you're talking about objects, you know, and you're earning objects to upgrade your items, and you know, you obviously create some inflationary supply in those objects. I'm very interested to hear like your thoughts on how you kind of maintain. You know, obviously you'd have some kind of object burns or something along those lines, but think about it, like if you can craft new objects or you can earn new objects in a game and the game grows, at some point there's going to be a ton of these items floating on secondary markets and things like this. And I'm sure this works in games as well. But it's
yes, yes. The number of various objects season after season keeps increasing. So in some games, what they do is like the new objects only happen if you play that season's game. Like, so the 3 months, I'll give you an example of this. Diablo 3 does this where you play for 3 months. It's called a season. You literally start the game over from scratch, but you can only get those items if you play within that season. So people will play that and then they'll get a neat, you know, sword that only works, you know, like it's the best in class. Then the next 3 months you'll have some other object and, you know, maybe, you know, it's not that useful for you in the next season, et cetera. So there is an element of a little bit of inflation there in that sense, but it's commensurate with the amount of time spent on acquiring it. And there's a certain rarity to those as well. So the drop rate for some of the really, really rare stuff requires a lot of grinding and playing. So that's where the game being really important is really fun. Cause if you're going to have stuff that's super rare, how are you going to distribute and even have the ability to get those rare things if you're not playing a lot, right? And it doesn't make sense to have that all entirely tied to, say, like, I have to put money in a slot machine every time. It's like going to a video game arcade and you just have to keep on putting money for everything. To some extent, it's a mixture of, like, time and gaming and some other elements. But the way I look at it is, you'd want to have... You almost want to have like seasons predefined and you have an inflation rate that is consistent with those seasons. And, you know, if new people want to come in and acquire certain new traits or features and things, you kind of have a roadmap that, you know, over maybe like a, I don't know, 5-year time or whatever your roadmap is. And this all takes place. And some of the items like and traits and things like that, people like to collect just consistent with certain types of achievements, right? Like maybe you can only get that doing certain things during certain times. But yeah, you're right. Like the number of possible stuff in the game can go crazy. There used to be a game online called Lord of the Red Dragon. Legend of the Red Dragon, Lord. And what was interesting about it was, this is back in the mid-90s or something when, you know, you had to log into the internet with a modem. And what's interesting is the game was super fun, but you could only do a certain number of actions per day. Like you could only have certain number of like stamina points or whatever. And once you've expended those, you can't like play more that day. So it was kind of interesting in that because back in those days you had modems, you didn't have persistent internet. The game couldn't run 24/7. Otherwise you'd be logged into the only server and it would use up the entire like bandwidth of that board. So you could only play for like, you know, 15 minutes at a time or something like that, but it was short actions. You'd fight some monsters and things, and it was all text-based. It was kind of fun. And eventually you'd gain items and things during that time. So to me, it's like with the NFT space, it's almost like you'd want something that say like you can play for 15 minutes a day. Almost think about it like the amps that you get at Prism. You know, you go in there, you push a button and you get your amps. It's got to be a relatively short game, a short activity that busy people that, you know, just want to be involved can play, but doesn't require an extreme amount of work. And then you figure out like with that interaction, like the more people are participating and the more people are getting items, you want to have a constant source of like both royalties and interactivity while also not creating exhaustive inflation. And getting that balance right is really tough. Like the Diablo people have like entire teams at Blizzard that sit around like running like computational models to figure that shit out. It is not easy to make a great game, I would warn. But there have been some interesting types of things done in the past, long before NFTs and long before like 3D graphics and everything, that were really great ways to do like 2D or fun text-based experiences that were really compelling. They're really fun. Like, and I'm not, you know, because obviously I've seen the world before, like, you know, mega 3D graphics video games and afterwards. And I can tell you that there are great games, even with really, really like what people would consider like low tech media, which could probably be built. Yeah.
Yeah. What you touched on is actually a really important point, which is what makes something a good game. And not necessarily a good game, but one that like has sustained traction and like engagement over time. And it's the ones that don't take a lot of time. Sometimes they do, but the ones where you have to come back every day and you're kind of thinking about like coming back and like, you know, opening the chest and getting your daily reward and like using your stamina and then like back to work. So I think that's a really big component of like success over time. That's really the do it, right? I mean, it's the reason why we check our freaking yields and everything. We like to see.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly the DeFi experience in a nutshell, right? Like all the same reasons why you might go in and push a button on a computer and push a button in DeFi. It's a similar concept in just the game space.
I think I got muted.
Sorry. What it is basically my phone is spannering up and the screen keeps basically, if you've ever hosted a Spaces, you get the full screen, a part screen, and then I was trying to accept someone to request and then it moved and ended up muting you. So apologies for that. So please, I didn't mean to cut you off. The perils of new technology. So apologies, Trev. That was completely Now I'm all thumbs. So, please finish off.
I mean, that's about it. That's how you create. That's how you create culture. That's how you create community. That's how you create sustained traction over time. It's a constant engagement. The trick is getting somebody to think about your app all the time, even when they're not using it. Like, I need to know. Like, it takes 45 minutes to refill my goddamn stamina, and I might set a timer. Who the fuck knows? You know. So, I mean, that's part of it. We know like when things unbond because we're paying attention, right? We have to unbond something on that day. I'm like ready to like redeploy something. So if you're engaging every day, you know, you have a really huge opportunity to like not get people addicted to something, but you build behavior, right? And then eventually you have like really passionate people build cool shit on top or like in parallel or contribute to your project. So overall, I think it's a key to success.
But you know, a good game, like you want to get addicted to it. You don't want it to end, right? That is the sort of sense you're trying to achieve.
Correct.
I know you don't want to like purposely addict people, but like people want to be addicted to a great game. That's just the whole point. That's like they want to be engaged to where they feel like the game is interesting enough to come back to over and over again.
Yeah, but in the meeting, like if we were in a meeting, I would say, "Hey, Seffy, like let's get these guys addicted to something."
Yeah, it's not good ad copy is what you're saying.
just one thing on that CFI, like your seasons thing. The only downside I can see about it is every season you did then end up with a bunch of useless objects, which may work in a gaming world where, I mean, I guess you are building a game, but you kind of almost would have to find a mechanism to kind of come in and then go, okay, how do we do burns or all this sort of stuff to go for the new season? And secondary, like someone might came along and go, hey, you know, I've earned my stripes and I upgraded my NFTs and I'm now part of, you know, the OGs and I've got an NFT that looks good. I've got the customs. And then suddenly it's like next season, oh, we're coming up with new stuff. Your shit's worthless now. Like, I mean, I guess it's part of keeping people engaged on the ongoing, but it's also kind of like, where's that balance as well?
Yeah, that entire concept, by the way, was called mudflation or multi-user domain inflation. And there's an entire like study of that shit for video games. And it was a real big problem back in the days of like RuneScape, EverQuest, Ultima Online, and ultimately World of Warcraft. There's an entire sequence of problems that mudflation creates. Imagine this. Here's another way to think about this. remember in a video game, if you go and you go and kill a monster, let's say the frog monster, and it's running around, you kill it, you get that monster's stuff, some items and some gold and this and that, right? So number one, that creates some inflation because you're bringing items into the game. But then when you go and sell them, or if you get an item that you sell at the vendor, let's say there's an infinite number of rocks you can break, right? Like take Ultima Online or whatever, you can mine for rocks. Then that creates a constant flow of new gold because the merchant just manufactures that gold. It's a type of proof of work in a sense. But what happens is that because there is no limit to the amount of rocks in the world, any number of new players can come in, the amount of gold coming into the game becomes sort of like relentless. And eventually gold becomes worthless because everyone has too much of it. And that was sort of like how the design of Bitcoin sort of emerged, because like that problem in game world was a constant problem. So yeah, Simon's point is correct. Like you have to figure out how to get rid of these excess items, but you have to do it in a way that fits the game properly, right? If you just simply arbitrarily burn them, we've noticed how that, like, it doesn't feel right, right? It has to be part of the game somehow.
What about implementing something like Pixie's model, where it's a lossless NFT, you have seasons. The more you pay for the higher tiers, you know, you get more DAO votes or something, but it's all the same pool of NFTs. They're just more votes on every NFT. Not that that's something that you should have in a game, but a lossless NFT where at the end of the season, like you guys were talking about, people can either opt to keep the thing that they minted and get and lose their principal. Like they, if it's $100 to mint one, and that money goes to, you know, wherever the hell, the DAO chest or the project chest, whatever it is. Or they can burn it and they can get back just their principal. And their yield goes to the DAO or wherever it's going, but you get back your principal if you burn it, or maybe a part of your principal or something like that.
And it feels really generally natural. It feels natural if you buy a coin that allows you to play the game. So the corollary here would be like, okay, people were perfectly fine paying a subscription in cash, USD, for their EverQuest or Ultima Online or World of Warcraft subscription, right? So you tie that into some monthly payment. And what ends up happening is that disconnects you from feeling like you're paying to just get stuff, right? Because if the moment you say, okay, you know what, I'm going to pay to get this neat sword, and that's going to help me win the game, it honestly just ruins the game, is what happens. So to me, it's like you pay to get into the game, you do stuff in the game, in NFT world, whatever that is. The neat stuff that you acquire in NFT world, you have to figure out how to make a viable, vibrant secondary market for that, and make royalties off of those sales, and make sure that market is interesting enough and culturally relevant enough that that market just goes in perpetuity. And that's kind of, in my way, the best, like the way you disconnect people's brain from the idea that, you know what, I just pay to play this thing. There's tons of those pay to play type games where, you know, you can get more equipment and shit just by throwing more money at it. But I find that they become annoying really quickly, and you find that the people that are willing to play stupid money for a video game, like I remember some of the iPad games and whatnot, some of the people like paying like $100,000 cash for like playing the game, and you're like, it just seems stupid. Like it just doesn't make any sense. Like the game is not that good to be playing
Candy Crush.
In a way that's the same concept, but but the point is, like, psychologically it just doesn't feel like you're playing a game. It just seems like you're just getting like stiff a lot of money, and it just doesn't make any sense to that at some level. So yeah, it's a mixture of like you use a entry with some sort of like relatively cheap object you're buying.
Yeah,
that object is like available to people no matter when they join, right? And then they can get involved quickly, not feel like, hey, you know what, only the OGs can afford this, right? And then you sort of like figure out how to tier everything after that to make it interesting. It's kind of my thought.
Yeah, you touched on something interesting, like in terms of a subscription model. I still think we're screwing up by not like implementing lossless subscription models across the board for things, because the game, like if it's $10 a month at $120, you know, you just lock up like, what is it, like $600, assuming 20% yield, but you can't assume 20% yield anymore. But like off of Anchor, like why not just lock it up and have the yield go to paying for the game? Like
yeah, like for example, if the game needs revenue, then just have people lock up Bonded Luna or whatever. And, you know, a lot of people will be comfortable with that, right? Because it's like,
yep,
your yield goes to playing. Okay, great. You still have your exposure to Luna. So people are happy there. And, you know, if they can part with some of their yield to get access to the components and things they need every day, or maybe like stamina points, right? Like, you, the more Luna you put up, like, maybe you get, you know, up to a certain maximum stamina. And then you just figure out the business model of the NFT project and see how much, you know, cash flow do you need.
Yep.
And kind of work from that, work backwards from there.
Yeah, it's really not that challenging. We're screwing up by not implementing more subscription, like lossless SaaS models. Like, let's do that.
Yeah, I think that's like the gaming industry is has already like fleshed this out quite extensively. You know, like when eBay shut down my ability to sell shit, it was kind of weak because they actually banned the ability to either give your account to somebody else, and they banned your ability to like sell game items or game characters on eBay. And when that happened, that whole thing got shut down. And it was because partly it was ruining the game, which is kind of one of the problems. But it was causing a lot of perverse incentives and that weren't designed for the game. And that kind of created a mess. But I think if you design around this idea, I think a subscription model is almost a necessary feature, and I think people would be very amenable to it. Honestly, I just don't think it'd be a problem.
Yeah, it's an everybody wins situation.
Absolutely. Just conscious, we've got another speaker who's sort of quietly been patiently waiting there. Terrain sort of came up a few minutes ago. Anything you'd like to add? Obviously, I know you've recently done your second mint on Terra with your sort of photography based sort of global travel project.
Yeah. Hello. Thanks for the opportunity. For those that are, projects new, we're one of the largest nature photography based NFTs on Terra, and still kind of rare in the true photography space. But I hopped in because it's interesting hearing you talk about these projects kind of going in seasons, more at some regular cadence, because that's where we've ended up, but not, we didn't initially get there for that reason, more so that I can only take so many pictures in a finite period of time and trying to get around to different parts of the world and make them more interesting. And so I settled on, you know, releasing around 100 pieces every 3 months, because that's moderately sustainable. But then it's been a really interesting balance of, you know, after the first series sold out, then trying to keep an eye on the secondary market and those prices, to then as series two came around, it's like, do I do the same price again? I bumped it up a little bit and related to kind of how the secondary market had looked. But yeah, it's having that roadmap of that kind of normal expected supply, but then still trying to continue to learn, as y'all were mentioning, that there's an entire, you know, field of statistical study for this that I am not an expert on. But just learning by doing and keeping that, planning to keep that consistent, and then just, you know, adapt and learn with the community along the way. And then as with each new series, being able to bring in new countries, new types of terrain, new seasons. You know, this series two had numerous ice type pieces because I managed to catch some snow in some cool places that hadn't happened in the fall. Yeah. So just, you know, continue to get out into the world and, you know, show that our planet is beautiful and we should intimately admire it, and how there's so many different ways to do that. But then balancing the whole value portion on top of that has been a really interesting thing to continue to work on and figure out.
Well, if you look at the fashion industry, right? I mean, and obviously season's so spot on with games and stuff like, and you're seeing NFT projects have to do this and come out with new improvements and new things rather than just existing, right? So, you know, like they'll come up with a new mint or a new upgrade or a new part of the storyline. If you look at their fashion industry, right, everywhere is it seasonal. Every 6 months there's a new season or even more, right? And that's due to like people's, you know, attention span and wanting something new and fresh and exciting. So you got to constantly have that excitement or that new stuff coming to keep people engaged. And I think that can take, you can kind of take different roads with it. You can either keep, you know, building your world and growing your world, or you can go like the Galactic Punks way and build a DAO and start bringing some exciting alpha through investments and that sort of stuff. I think there's a few ways to go with that.
Yeah, definitely. And then it's interesting trying to balance, you know, knowing that I'm a or small, you know, maybe medium sized project that we're not going to, a DAO is never going to make sense in, like, you know, maybe several years from now or something like that. But like right now, the focus being the art and, you know, that peace or value that can come from admiring nature in this kind of way.
I actually disagree. I'm going to cut it. I'm going to disagree. So I think you're getting stuck on like a DAO making sense from like a monetary and like investment perspective, but that's not necessarily true. You know, if people like your art, they mint it out, having a DAO with no like monetary, like we're not investing money in something, maybe they want you to go and do something and you do a vote on where you're going to go to shoot next. Like that has nothing to do with money except for maybe paying to get there, right? So I don't think it's that you don't need a DAO. It's, could you use one for something cool like that? And would that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. that's what I'm here for, to hear different ideas. And it's interesting trying to then think about, you know, what are the pros and cons of formalizing it in that way? Because I mean, we've basically, you know, we've got a Telegram chat with 40 or 50 people in it, with only 5 or 6 that are very active. And so they're effectively my DAO at this point. and I talk with them about a lot of the plans and what we do next. And then, but yeah, it's interesting to think about, when do you see more benefit in formalizing that kind of relationship with your community?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. You could, if people could post some, you know, like post substantial portions of, like, say, for example, Bonded Luna, and like that funded your trip to go shoot something very specific that like people vote on. You're like, okay, I'm going to hop on a plane and do the work to, you know, get a passport there, and I'm going to go do this, you know.
That would be incredible. No, that I love that.
Because Gilles, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, sure. Actually, pretty interesting, the subject there, Dwayne gets to, because we've also been starting up our DAO. We have an elected DAO council, about 20 people, but it tends to get hard to get everyone involved. I have a couple of involved holders that are now helping me set up a marketing strategy, looking up to fill up some teams for legal, marketing, investing, but also alpha teams, teams that look at other chains. To get all those positions filled is a hard thing. Looking into incentives as well now, because not everyone wants to work for free, and understandably so.
Maybe you guys should talk to Subera, you know, because they're building the infrastructure for subscriptions, right? So yeah, maybe it's simply a matter of saying, hey, our the Terrain you know, DAO or whatever, or you know, the project would like to have this available as a subscription model there. And then you figure out how to make that work in terms of like what you want to offer for that subscription, essentially.
You can also go talk to Pixie about those losses at NFTs. You could launch through there if that makes sense for you as well.
Yeah, it's interesting thinking about almost kind of the other side of what could decentralize within this project, of also like sourcing the images through the community. I actually had someone reach out off of one of the last Twitter spaces and told me they were traveling the world for the next month, and they're going to go to 20 different countries. And, you know, they were doing some other photography based work, but cool to, you know, group up with those kind of people. And, you know, if they take a fantastic picture of a mountain from a particular place, like also grab a picture of the terrain there, and then you can kind of link those together in a way. But then also, I mean, I'm never going to see every square foot of the world. So like ultimately for this project to grow to any larger scale would involve bringing more people into it, and then you figure out how that works. Like up to this point, if I had a couple people that contribute a few pieces, like Finn sent me some shots from a few times he went frisbee golfing, that made it into series 2. And so like, you know, at that scale, it's like, okay, you send me a few pictures, I can, you know, send you one of the NFTs from the mint. But then when it grows more drastically in scale, there's lots of different ways that and forms that could take.
Sure. And sorry for not addressing Giles, you know who's in your community likes your projects. Incentives are dangerous. So like, if you know who likes your project, offer them the incentive. Just don't offer an incentive and say we need to do something is my only suggestion. And that's all. That's all.
Yeah, thanks. That's an interesting point again. Thank you.
Trevor, what did you mean by that? I'm not sure I fully understood the...
Oh, he was talking about like he needs like to hire for positions. And I mean, you guys know what I do with all the interns and shit, but like you don't typically want to say I'm hiring for this position, I need this, unless you're like desperate. The people that like your project and engage in your community in any level, they ask questions, they come to Twitter space, you see them often, they're in your Discord, whatever it is. Passion is the main driver in this ecosystem. So you find who's passionate and who has like decent skills, maybe. And even if they don't have decent skills, sometimes, you know, base level skills people can learn. And these people that will work for free or like engage and just like your project, offer them the incentive. So he's talking about like monetary incentive or something like that. To hire out, you want to look into who's engaging and who actually loves your project, because they're the ones who are going to go the extra mile for you. Is what
as
I would suggest.
You're saying as opposed to just posting for a job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the last thing you should do.
Great points. Thanks. Because that's also what I was thinking. But thanks for the reassurance.
But it sounds like a lot of the things we're talking about, and correct me if I'm wrong, is, you know, with these projects, NFTs, you know, Terrain, Guilds, what you guys are talking about is what value can you provide back and how is that value kind of looked at from the investor and how do you continue to grow? I mean, that's kind of the goal, right? Around when you have an NFT, it's moved from just owning a piece to more or less, what am I getting for this piece? What can I do with it? Can I earn, you know, monthly, yearly?
It's different though. There's two kinds of people that are buying these things. There's the investor who buys it based on speculation, like price go up, right? And then you have the ones that buy it because they like the art or they like the project. So, and then you have people in between that like both. So
I agree with that.
I think it's both. Yeah. That. Right.
I was going to point out.
Sorry, go ahead, Tori.
Yeah. I was going to say the same thing as Trev is obviously we're more in the space of pure aesthetic and trying to build that community around just that vision of, we believe the earth is beautiful and should be intimately admired. And then, you know, do things for the people here and there of, you know, people that minted the first series, whitelist for the second series, you know, easy stuff like that. But there's not, you know, there's not an immediate plan to bring a ton of utility into that because it's not the core driver of it. And you know, there's always ways it could evolve in the future, but it's intended to be very purely aesthetic.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think sometimes we come, like for me, right, I'm more financial, mathematical kind of mindset where we talk about utility. So our mindset goes to what utility does it bring? What can it do for me? What, you know, and we kind of step away sometimes from the pure, like, this is just art. And sometimes you're just going to own something that could go up in value over time. Right.
That's what we're trying to really, really pull people towards. Like even here, we're spending a lot of time on our phone in this Twitter space, but when's the last time you just looked at a flower that you were walking by and like noticed the small details of it and just a totally different headspace than we find ourselves in a lot of times in this area?
It's because we're all degenerates though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I look at how to refract that flower and see what I can get from each petal.
You do this with the pollen and then you do this with the petals and then you chop the stem up and yeah.
Excellent. I was just going to agree. I think there's so many different shades and flavors within the NFT space, from some really good, incredibly talented artists to people that are actually trying to create a community of which, you know, the hanger is that there's a PFP, there's a club, that there's a community build. And I think there's so many flavors in between. But I tend to agree with Lucky in that, because a lot of us came into this broader space, crypto, not looking for aesthetics, but looking at the financials, then that kind of lens often, you know, kind of is a lens that we focus on for everything. But I think taking the example of Terrain, the brilliant aesthetically led projects that have really caught my eye, and I've looked at them not as investments, but as it's a passion project that someone set up. And I think it's a broad enough church that can work, and I think that's where, you know, where probably those lines sometimes get blurred. But actually, I still think for those aesthetic projects, I think it was quite good having that conversation there, that if a community gets behind a single photographer, starts to put in their own community-generated art, there you have a collection too, obviously slightly different, but there's a number of AI-generated collections where the community are creating, you know, the secondary collections, creating a market for them, producing their own art, creating their own capability, evolving the piece. But I think I'd like to go back to one of the earlier comments that was made, which I think is really important, a really good one. When you're building a project, I mean, I've done it myself. I'll help projects because I like what they're about. And it's the passion aspect that shouldn't be underestimated, as opposed to just going for that, here's a job, here's an opportunity, which is the traditional world's approach. And so I think that absolutely, there was a great project I was on the spaces with last week, PS Labs. The guy set up a really clever idea, very small scale project, and he just found his community going, hey, we can build you a Discord, we can do this, we can help you with that. And like people were almost falling over themselves to make the project a success. And I think that that's brilliant. That's community driven project development, mm-hmm. from a very minor project to a very major success. And I love that sort of aspect of the space. Sorry, Trevor, you were going to...
You're good. I was going to agree with you. The one thing that I think people need to continue doing is to talk about your ideas, talk about them to anybody who you think, I mean, even if they are not listening, I guess maybe don't talk to those people, but talk about your ideas, talk to the other people, because I've built projects like because people are interested, and you can put them together in a room and then you can go find the dev talent. You can just do that. But you get passionate people that want to build some cool shit. Like, yeah, every project, if you build a protocol, you need all the business people, you need the marketing people, you need the project manager, you need that. They're not the devs, but a lot of people have these other skills. And if you're passionate about it, you can help them chase something, and you can fill in the gaps as you go. So that's one thing I'd like to kind of encourage people in this space to do more often than we're doing now.
Yeah, we have a list. We have a secret list of what we call all stars. So we have a list of people that we know have, you know, are exceptional in their field, and we know that they've got like, you know, maybe they're magnetic or they've got that ability to kind of draw people in. And we're like, okay, we've got this A list on the side, which is what would our dream team look like? What would our dream DAO and our dream kind of team for a protocol or for an NFT project look like? And I think that's really key to look at, like who's passionate, like who's out there like talking to people and getting out there, and who can, you know, bring these skills and all this sort of stuff. And I think that's a great way to look at it too.
100% agree. Passion is everything. I think we're all violently agreeing. What I like is if someone has a really good idea, you're right. You can find the devs, you can find that support, and actually the community wants people to succeed. It's a wonderful space that we're all in, where people will rally together because there's a common collective interest, and often small ideas can very quickly escalate with the right passion and investment behind them, emotional investment and everything else. So that's absolutely great. So I guess in terms of, obviously we started out talking around why NFT projects in particular, because we didn't really get onto protocols. It was also part of the part of the title of today's. We always make them broad. We never quite know which rabbit hole we're going to go down on a weekly basis, which is why this is so great. We're talking around, I guess one aspect I wanted to tap into, we haven't fully, is there a sense perhaps, and it's a bit of a loaded question, that there is almost a path that projects think they need to walk down in order to succeed? And actually, is that actually right? For example, do you need tokens? Do you need to create these staking mechanisms? There are other ways potentially to create that value capture for projects. So I just really wanted to kind of throw that out, obviously to the panel, and obviously anyone else who perhaps wants to step up and join the throng, as it were.
The short answer is no. Like, there's no tried and true model, right? There's nothing that says you have to do a token. Like, I advise on a number of projects, and I always ask them, they're going through token ops, I'm like, do you actually need a token? And it's not that I don't think they need a token. It's that if you don't stop and ask yourself, do I need a token? You're just going to build a token because everyone's got a token. You have governance. Sometimes you can't implement good governance for like years. You may not, maybe never. So I think you always have to ask, do you need it? Do you absolutely need it? Does it add value? And if it doesn't, maybe just use USD. And in regards to everything else, every project is different. So I think we need to break the mold a little bit in terms of how we approach things. And we've already done it. So I encourage people to keep innovating in process and operations. It's really interesting to work within like a decentralized team where like everybody knows what they kind of do and then like just deliver really high impact shit in their vertical. And everyone's like, whoa, but there's nobody managing them, which is crazy. So you just kind of report things in. So it's interesting. It's changing. And I'd encourage people to continue optimizing, I would say.
Excellent. And I did say it was a bit of a loaded question. So that's exactly my thoughts as well. Just because there's a route from A to B doesn't mean you have to go via a certain route. Break those molds, challenge the paradigm. This is an opportunity to be truly innovative, fail fast, and let's see what people want. And actually, I love that because that's a decentralized way almost of running a business as well. The way you've just described that, ideas permeate up and there is no kind of blocker at the top. You know, I've worked in big corporates in my day job, in my career, and it's amazing. Often the best ideas, they get talked about, they get shelved, they get looked at, they get put away. In this space, people get on, try an idea, and then they evolve it. And yes, sometimes it fails, absolutely. But often it can work because you haven't got those traditional blockers and fears. It's a great innovative almost kind of like test bed for so many different activities. I'm talking beyond NFTs now, obviously.
It's actually a good point. You mentioned fear. We do have the fear. The fear is the same. So actually the fear is what you have to cross and overcome in order to be able to like think freely and know that you can do all this cool shit. So I'd say there's a shit ton of fear and to just suck it up and like get over it. And it sounds easy, but like fear is what prevents people from taking that next step. So do what's right for you, but don't let it control you.
Yeah, the fear's the funny part. I mean, this is completely off topic. So the fear's the when you're in that fear space, it's actually the place to be, right? It's I know it sounds really cliche, but when you're in that place where you feel like shit and you feel like you're not the, you know, it's out of your depth, that's like when you know you're in the right place. And I found like the most growth and success always comes from that place where you're pushing yourself enough to be freaking out, but you go through it. So yeah, I know completely off topic, but it's a very good point to add.
Yeah, no, that's all spot on. And going into that question of when you're looking at tools commonly used in the marketplace, all that, but like, do I need this? Like filtering all that through your vision, like your foundational why, which if you don't know, you're just going to follow along with what everyone else is doing. But if you know why your project exists, you can answer those kind of questions for yourself. Like we came on the scene in, I don't know, early December when people were literally saying every project has to have a Discord. And like looking, I looked at our scale, looked at why we existed, and knowing I wanted to have a space for people to talk about what we're doing and keep them up to date. But I didn't need an entire Discord like all the other several hundred projects. So I just made a Telegram group and the people that wanted to be there stayed in touch with that. But I was able to answer that question through like knowing like what the foundation was of what I was doing rather than just following the curves.
And that is interesting because as someone who is in a lot of Discords, yeah, mainly because I'm just fascinated by the space and try and follow all the new developments, they can be quite multi-threaded and difficult to keep track of, even if you're only in a handful of Discords. Whereas at least with Telegram, it's very linear, but you've got that kind of engaged group ethos. I think there's probably a balance between the two somewhere in terms of my own sanity and life. But I think that's good. I mean, I just encourage people, and Simon and I are obviously looking at some ideas at the moment. We want to find a way to not deliberately be different, but just look at what actually works as opposed to following that kind of very rough guide that exists in the space. Because I always point out to people that even if you take the most mature of NFT projects, they've only been around for a few years. Yet we're still writing the history of this. We're still in that early stages of the Model T Ford, if you like, if you're looking at a parallel in motor travel. There's so much more to come and so much more to develop and evolve. And I certainly enjoy the tangents, and I know CeFi on previous spaces we've talked around, the kind of the gaming parallels. I think there's something massive there that has to be unlocked, and I think will be. And I think we talked about Strange Clan earlier on the call, that they are building a genuine game. That there's some very interesting early threads of activity. A project that I'm really excited that's starting to come to the fore is the Lunatic Clubhouse. They're looking at developing a game that I think could be really interesting and innovative for the space. There's so many more. And then there are games. And I think to again, I think it was on your point, CeFi, people pay insane amounts of money to play a game that, quite frankly, is a little bit crap. Do we want that for this space? No, we don't. But people will, you know, move in and spend that sort of money. And I think probably last part of my ramble is, how do we make it accessible to a broader audience? Because everyone on this call, we are incredibly early in this space. And I think for it to truly succeed and expand, we don't want it to be a very small closed industry. Personally, that's my view. We want it to be something that's broadly adopted. And I am talking about the second part here of our titles. We haven't really touched upon the wonderful world of protocols. But in essence, we really need to make it accessible, attainable, something nice for the OGs if we're talking about the NFT space, but something that newbies can aspire to see, I want to get involved with this project and I can see a route through to success for me, whatever success looks like for the individual.
So I would actually, I agree with all that in terms of accessibility, but I would say the solution has nothing to do with NFTs. And I mean, has everything. I mean, it might, but it has to do with equality in the world. And it comes down to people being able to earn a fair wage, even if they're in a really poor country. And crypto does that on its own by design. So I think this problem gets solved eventually, but I don't think it's anything inherent to NFTs that we have to build in, honestly.
I was thinking more. Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking more around the fact that some of those early projects have almost an unattainable locked door to anyone who might aspire to join them due to the sheer growth and that kind of the sort of the whale focus. And that's the kind of door that I'm talking about. Now, I totally agree, Trev. I mean, one of my passions outside of Terra, it's not been particularly successful, but I think it's a really good principle behind it is the reserve currency RSR, and the plan to really help countries, particularly in places like LATAM with challenging inflationary environments, to really give people like that leg up and that escape. And I could talk about that for hours. It's actually one of my roots into crypto a few years ago. As a project, I liked what they stood for. It wasn't about making money for me. I just liked their ethos and plans. And again, I am massively tangenting away, but we need to break down some of those barriers. But yeah, I was just purely talking from a kind of some of the, if you like, the super projects that they're all about value capture. And then what you end up doing is creating a closed shop, an elite club. There's got to be a balance somewhere. I can see Gilles has his hand up, so I'll let you jump in, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Super Taro. It's again interesting you say that, because we did have a project launching on Taro that was pretty accessible. PS Labs cost only $5 to mint it, and you can make your own art. I think you can. There's a few ones every week, and you can make up to 3 pieces of own AI art. So that's pretty accessible. But if you're talking about the established projects like Punks, Bulls, maybe, Walk Me Monkeys, for instance, you have Hellcats, they all have a pretty high barrier for the OG NFT series. Bogmi has the babies. Bulls also had baby bulls, so that was cool for people getting in at a fairly low price. They did them around Christmas. It was also for charity, I think. So there are some derivatives or Gen 2 or Gen 3 even with the babies. They still cost some good money, but they're a lot cheaper than the OG NFTs. And they do give the same access with WalkMe for DAO or for alpha sharing or whitelist winning.
And I think that that's really good. And certainly PS Labs, I don't know if what point you're on the call, but I did a spaces with those guys last week. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Five UST mint unlocks the ability to basically form your own art. I think that's fantastic. And that's a great model of a very accessible project, which I'm a big fan of. And again, they've only been going for something like 6 weeks, but incredible work from them. So, you know, huge hats off. And I'm already a big fan and hoping that I'll be doing a follow-up with those guys. So minor plug, very nice guy and got some really good people. In fact, the projects I kind of sort of alluded to that had effectively, yeah, an individual had started it and a community rallied around and said, hey, we can do this. We can set this up for you. We can do that. And they're a fantastic group, really great group. And the epitome of helping someone who's got a great idea to one of the points made earlier. And the group forms around you and the passion brings people into it, which I think is absolutely wonderful. So great shout out there, Gilles, and appreciate that as a reference. Badgers, sir, over to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly say thank you to Jill and Archangel Raphael for doing that with us, because we came into the scene as nobodies, basically, and they did that with us. So they invited a shit ton of people into our Discord. The first day was like it was completely mad, and that wouldn't have happened if they wouldn't have been there. So I hope to do the same thing when we get bigger, and I encourage everybody to do the same when there's new projects arising, because it's very very important, and that definitely made all the difference for us as well.
So. One thing while we're on the topic of NFTs, you're talking about like is following the same model the right thing? And we talked about that. I think we need to start thinking about NFTs, and NFT projects should start thinking about themselves this way, as like an actual company, not a company, but like you're a project, you have a vision, you have to establish your vision, and you rally people around what you're trying to chase, whether it's you're going to solve this or solve that. Or if you're just going to be a club to like hang out, I think the clubs that where you hang out and it's just like friends, that's fine. If the barrier to entry gets too high, somebody builds a different one. So I think we're going to see a phasing out of a lot of those at some point, and more ones geared towards like actually solving actual problems, like actually having high impact. I think we'll see a shift away from those clubs. So I think any project that like wants to separate themselves would be focused more on where you're going and how you're going to get there, and then selling people on that vision. And then you have a team, and then you have a community, and that's organic and sustainable over time, compared to we're a club, we invest in shit sometimes. Maybe the number goes up, maybe it doesn't, maybe nobody can get in, who cares? Maybe I'll sell it for $1 billion, fuck it, you know, I got a yacht, who cares, right? But actually focusing on achievable things, even if it's something that seems like it's impossible to do. Like, look at some of the protocols and what they've been able to do, right? So I would encourage you to think beyond, we're going to mint something, mint out, yay, club, yay, poker, yay. I can do that on my own, you know? I think about it is all I'm saying.
No, that's brilliant. I was laughing on mute there. No, that, I think you've absolutely captured it. The let's make a billion and let's have a yacht just tickled me, because you know that's not what it's about for most of us. And I think you're absolutely right there. So I love what you're saying. And I mean, in terms of looking at kind of wrapping up fairly soon, probably in terms of Akinzer. I wonder what happened to Lucky. Lucky is back. Lucky was not so lucky with perhaps Twitter rugging. So we've got Lucky back on the stage now. I was just lucky to sort of wrap up around the group. And if anyone else obviously wants to step up, please do so. I can see some very cool, familiar faces just flicking through my screen and desperately trying not to mute everyone. So, I mean, for me, yes, we haven't really explored the protocol value capture. I think that's maybe a topic that we can explore in more depth next time. And it, certainly, these spaces that we run on a weekly basis are all designed to have this sort of fantastic engagement. It's a record that I've never opened a space and 1 minute later had 45 people on it. So that was quite impressive. Thank you to whoever accidentally rugged or fell asleep on the previous state spaces that was referenced. But no, anyway, I shall stop rambling now. I just wanted to really kind of give a last opportunity. Obviously, Lucky, great to see you back here. I noticed you dropped off. Do you want to sort of say a few words? Because I know you've just come back to request to speak.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I got internet lost there. No, I really appreciated what Trev said there. I thought that's a great way to look at it. And I do hope that, we people start looking at it that way. I think it's a shift that makes sense. And, as this evolves, I think the community itself continues to provide the ideas and it just continues to get better over time.
Are there any references maybe that maybe some folks can research some reference as far as like people that have built NFT sort of value capture and tokenomic models? And there's probably a point at which like you just take notes on all this and say, hey, look, who's doing this right? And ultimately, there's only so many ways to skin a cat, right? There's not an infinite number of ways to run an economic system. So there's some finite number of methods that work really well. And you could probably create a list of those. And you could probably almost create a list of almost like depending on what your criteria are. Is it revenue? Is it growth of the value of an NFT? Is it the utility of an NFT? Is it to foster ongoing creativity? And like you have to actually fund a certain ongoing, operations. There's so many different ways like the design would play out depending on what your end goals are. And it's like you almost have to get that right from the very beginning because it's just very clunky to try to fix things after the fact. And part of the problem is it gets clunky because we don't know, if we don't know what we're doing at the beginning, and then we learn all of the things we did wrong after like a year or two. And it's sort of like why like colleges exist, right? Like or professions for doctors. Like, you don't go and you decide to figure out how to become a doctor from scratch. There are certain like realities that become understood over a period of time, and that creates a body of knowledge that that then can be passed on. You read a book and say, oh, okay, this is how I create a tokenomic model or something like that. So someone, you could probably have like an NFT that literally an infinite NFT that you can charge for a buck for, and it like gives you the full body of information that you need to, it's sort of like a for sale online document that has all this data in it that people can follow and kind of think about maybe. And then that would include like examples of projects that have done a great job, right? If you like Spectrum protocols, token economics, or you like, Curve or Astro's token economics, and those led to certain styles of incentives for a protocol or for an NFT project. Like, there's got to be like a fairly short list one can create as far as effective methods that people can use. So then you have like a tool chest of methods, and then you kind of pick and choose from the ones that you think are beneficial to you. And someone made mention of this. I think it's on Juno, I believe, a protocol called DAODAO, D-A-O-D-A-O. Might be worth looking into, but it sort of created a system where people can just sort of spin up a DAO with some of the features and criteria that they want, and also spin up a token for that simultaneously, which is fascinating. So that might be a project worth looking into a little bit.
Yeah, we have some neat stuff that are coming on Terra that'll be able to serve as like building blocks for some cool shit like that. Also open source tooling coming from like five different projects. So
yeah, like Andromeda is doing some things that might enhance some of those ideas as well. Andromeda,
yeah, they are.
Yeah, cool.
It's almost like we need a whiteboard session, Steffi, and kind of like we write out all these protocols and all these things that they've done and kind of pick the best of the best and kind of say, here, we think this is the best way to go about something, kind of document it all together.
Interesting.
Best practices. So someone can probably have a job as like a NFT DAO creator consultant, right? Like you just go and talk to them for an hour and they just tell you what to do, depending what your goals are, right?
It's already been done. It was one of the first people I broke into this ecosystem, Ryan. Now he's running around. You guys probably know Rex. Like, he runs all the fucking Discords, right? Like, he's everywhere. He's also an otter for some reason.
He's an otter.
Self-proclaimed.
Like, yeah.
But like the an animal. Author or like an otter as in the little
animal? Oh, animals. An otter, like
the animal.
Clams on your stomach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I'd be heard as well. I mean, clearly there is a manual that's gradually been written, if that makes sense. It's probably not all codified in one plate.
But
yeah, it is happening. And obviously, the scripts are being edited, they've been changed, they've been developed by the community. It's all kind of coming together, if you like. We're still in the early stages of finding out what works, what doesn't. I could see that the spaces has kindly rugged Simon, he's obviously got some good views. He'll be back shortly, I'm sure. I was actually looking because it's getting quite late for me. I've got a 5:30 a.m. start. It's 10:30 p.m. So if you want to find another space to invade soon, I do need to probably wrap up fairly soon. Just from the point of view of being relatively late, but I can press on for a few more minutes because I think it's been a fantastic debate and discussion. I'm just going to invite one more to the floor, which is. Okay, bring someone else up now. See what we've got to say. We've got DYOFR to the floor, sir.
I want to know what the F stands for. I'm pretty sure I know what it is.
It's financial, of course.
Excellent. Of course.
So, listen, I heard Steffi talking about this. I've been following him around the spaces for a couple weeks. Great speaker. I love everybody else. It's lovely. I just wanted to see if you knew about this book. There's a book. It's called
what is it?
economicsdesign.com. They supposedly created a tokenomics textbook or some kind of reference book called economicsdesign.com. I don't know if I have privilege to like tag it on the top there, but it's simple URL anyways.
Yep. By all means, no, that's very helpful. If you can do that, by all means, do. And Simon is back as well.
Oh, this is interesting.
There's like a consulting company kind of thing, like we're talking about, huh?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
I like our whiteboard, though. We should whiteboard that shit, though.
Delphi Digital used to do a fair amount of that kind of consulting work, and then they moved to... away from doing that and just basically supporting very specific projects wholeheartedly. Like, for example, I don't know, I think Mars and Astroport on Terra are both Delphi projects, or Subera, I think, Lavana are supported by Delphi in the background. Sometimes those groups that have just built these things successfully or seen lots of failures over time and, get a feeling for what works sometimes does help instead of reinventing the wheel. It's like calling an architect to help build your house instead of figuring out how to build it yourself if you don't have any clue. So there are sometimes the body of knowledge and the amount of trial and error you have to do to get it right is so long that sometimes it's worth paying someone to figure it out for you.
Is there like an NFT certificate that we can start?
Yeah, probably. It comes as an NFT and there's only six of them. So, yeah,
like what are those wine people called, a sommelier or whatever they're called, people that like know wine really well?
Oh, sommeliers. Yeah. I'm just imagining that you could have bad courses where it sort of rugs you halfway through and you never get your NFT as well, but no, I think that's a really, really good way to probably wrap things up. In terms of Simon's now back, so do you want last thoughts, Simon, before we kind of bring this to a close?
Yeah, I'm rushing to the airport and my Twitter completely spazzed out, so I dropped off for a little while. I missed most of that, but I just want to add on the last point with the incubation. I think that's a really important part of the space in general. I haven't seen it done with NFTs too much, but you do see it, as you said, in Delphi. You know, we run an incubator as well, and it's just a good way, I think, for projects to, and even for, if there's one for NFTs, to kind of get the connections and the existing knowledge on, especially the behind the scenes stuff. Because, I mean, we talk about NFTs, right? And it's like starting a business in a company. There's so many behind the scenes pieces that need to go into place, from legal to admin to everything, that some people may not have experience with. So I think that's it. I think incubation is going to become bigger and bigger in the future.
Thanks, Simon. So, yeah, any last thoughts before we close out? And obviously, really appreciate the fantastic panel that we've had tonight, or today, depending what type, part of the world you're in, or morning in Simon's case. So, yeah, just last thoughts, and then I'll look to close us out. Or I can just close us out.
Shameless show, Terra Dapp Expo, June 9th and 10th. I would go. Please. Shameless shill. That's it. Zephy, you're coming, right? In like a Power Ranger costume or something, yeah?
Yeah, with a Darth Vader voice changer.
Very cool.
Would be like, hey, that's him.
I'm going to come dressed as a pimp.
Is that the one in Austin?
Yes, Austin.
Yeah. I won't be at that one, but I certainly intend to get over to some in the next year or so. I'm sort of extricating myself from TradFi at the moment in terms of my day job. But no, I think that does sound like a fascinating event. And give it time, I'll be wearing a gorilla mask and an orange hoodie.
I
love
it.
It's like a whole cosplay thing going on. Is there a fan? I'd pay to see that, but anyway, I'm gonna come with a Chuck E. Cheese outfit with like that whole band. All right, that's okay.
Fantastic. That is it's quite a surreal way to end things. But no, thank you everyone for joining, just joining this evening. We do have these regular events, normally same time every week. We pick out a different topic, and as I always encourage, you know, please do, you know, DM either Simon or myself, or drop some thoughts on Twitter for other topics. And obviously our policy is always open stage. Anybody who wants to come and join us, you know, come up, say your piece, because ultimately I think that's the way we all learn, evolve and develop as a community. There's a danger if you only listen to a few people, it becomes an echo chamber and the ideas don't really evolve. And I actually learned so much from these events, and certainly would consider myself a passionate participant rather than an expert on all things. So now it's been great. Thank you, everyone. Have a good rest of your day. Safe flight in Simon's case. And have a good, as I say, remains of Monday, depending which part of the world you're in, or start of Tuesday for others.
Thanks for jumping on, guys. Look forward to having you guys on next week. We'll stay, I think, on the NFT road for a little while longer still, but yeah.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was a Super Terra Space with CeFi. I love how he just rolls in with the whole gang, is like, this is our space now. It's that meme. Look at me. This is my space now. Tokenomics, staking, liquidity, and value capture for NFTs and protocols. Recorded on Monday, April 11th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Have you heard about the new Terra Invest Strategy Discord server Orbital Command spun up? If you're looking for a chill place to chat about different Luna stacking strategies, or looking for some alpha, or if you're trying to find the best UST farms, or even if you just have a quick question you need answered, be sure to stop by TIS and say hi to the Orbital Command gang. Hell, I'm even in there sometimes when I'm not editing hours of CFI spaces. You can find me in that server chatting about NFTs and answering basic Terra Luna questions. The link to the server is in the show notes, and for more information, check out orbitalcommand.io. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. I'm running out the gate, rapping, step up to the plate. Represent the base when I'm rapping out my fate. Used to play ball, now I'm sitting on the bench like a mitt. Like to play dumb, so you can't tell me shit. Never gonna get me like a raise in your 50s. And if we go drifting, you better whip it swiftly. I'm on empty, feeling peppy enough to do a fucking barrel roll. Running out of air like this planet isn't terraformed. Looking terrible, like you need a breath. Getting cancer from these wearables, feeling kinda blessed. Tracking everywhere we go, error bar slow. Here we are, so I guess we put the terror in the art show. I'm not a leader, but I'll lead if you mislead her. All the creature comfort certified up in this teacher. Feeling like a tenure isn't even needed. Taking all that hunger, trying to feed it. Learning how to love life before we get to meet it. Rhythm. Coming at me first, you're gonna get it last. Never mind the mass, time's velocity divided by the past. Can't fight the facts, rhyming fast, lighting around. In fact, a little backhand should straighten up these little rats. You better pay attention to the dude that's spitting facts. Everybody likes to rap about how they got no attachment. Straight abandoned in the back of some shitty shack. Learn how to eat from watching dogs fight over trash. If you think I'm crass, brash, being a little ass, I'm feeling a little bashful about bringing the illest back. It's like the virus brought the violence from the lowest to the highest, and we all got super quiet like the Mayans. And I don't even know where the fuck we go from here. A bunch of long hairs, growing beards, not showing fear. One step forward, taking two steps back, and pray to your mother we don't hit a crack.
Terra Spaces.